T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Corner of Broadway and Battery. Damon Bruce, Ray Ratto, and Matt Kolsky. Broadcasting in beautiful downtown San Francisco. This is Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
All right, they're playing our song. Welcome to a little What If Wednesday. We got big questions. We got a ton to talk about today and some fabulous guests for you. Starting later on this hour, we're going to say hello to a man who was part of the 2010s NFL All-Decade Team, a six-time Pro Bowler who is now the starting center for your San Francisco 49ers. Alex Mack is going to join us today. A Mort Report. Mr. San Diego himself, Darren Smith from down in Southern California, to talk about what the Giants got laying in front of them with so many games remaining with the Padres. Last night, the Giants beat the laid-down-to-die Padres for a ninth straight win, giving them 95 wins on the year with 17 games remaining in the year. Wow. Unbelievable. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game. Raymundo, hola.
Hola, back at you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, the Padres are dead. They look lifeless. They're not hitting very much anymore. I think they have 10 home runs in the last 3 weeks, which with that lineup is scandalously bad. So,
and they got sloppy. They've been sloppy with the baseball. I mean, throw the ball, catch the ball. They don't do that very well anymore.
Well, they haven't really done that a lot this year. I mean, they were basically supposed to be the National League's answer to the Toronto Blue Jays, but Fernando Tatis has been in and out of the lineup with that shoulder thing that doesn't seem to go away. Manny Machado hasn't been protected in the lineup the way they expected he would be. They're just a slightly better than ordinary team that, frankly, I wouldn't give much of a shot at getting into the wild card at this point.
Yeah, the thing, everything you guys are saying is right. I mean, that team looks rough, but the thing that stood out to me the most is, Ray said it, that they just look down. That it's like there's like a hangdog look is the phrase that keeps running through my head about the San Diego Padres. And that surprises me more than anything because they are still in the wild card race. And it's not like they're like three-time repeat division winners. This is a chance to get in the playoffs, which is not exactly a regular experience for your franchise. And Tatis has been in and out of the lineup, but he's been incredible when he's in it. So, I don't know. I'm surprised there's not more energy to that team. I'm surprised at the look of them.
Yeah, I am too. I see a team that looks like all they consider is opportunity lost, not opportunity that they still have in front of them. And maybe that's just the soul-crushing experience of playing the Dodgers before you roll on in to play the Giants, and you're measuring yourself against two teams you thought you might even be better than, and boy, has the information come back completely different than every single preseason prognostication could possibly be. And I'm just looking at how this all plays out. And I don't want to get too far down the road and jinx anyone or any Giant or anything like that, man, but there are 17 games left in this year. 8 of them are with this reeling, don't look right at all Padres team. three more of those games are against the road Rockies, not the Colorado Rockies, but the road Rockies. The road Rockies are 22 and 51 away from
Coors. Sounds like a like another name for cow feces, you know.
I was going to hope you were going to say ice cream, but yeah, you're right. You're right. Three games against the Diamondbacks, which is clearly the worst team in baseball. They've got 19 road wins all year. That game's going to happen at 24 Willie Mays Plaza. They got three home games remaining against the National League West leading Braves. I'm looking at it all. This team is eight wins away from tying the greatest regular season in franchise history. Currently, the Giants are enjoying their longest winning streak in the Ray, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm going to call it the longest winning streak in the history of the franchise in the month of September. If it's just San Francisco, I'm getting it wrong. You want to go back to Gotham, you go right ahead and tell me I'm wrong there. But I the way I heard it out of the corner of my ear, just listening to the game recap and everything, that this is the longest winning streak this team's ever enjoyed in the month of September. And I mean, I'm really... I don't want to get to the, you know, let's not get to the end of the year. Let's enjoy these last 3 weeks. And I think that you're going to, because this team continues to win. I'm trying to pin it down, fellas. I got this season coming in at 12-5. And I think that's almost being ungenerous. Like, they could do better than 12-5 totally. But let's just call it 12-5 in their last 17 games. That means the Giants would break the regular season tape with 107 wins. 107 wins. And you know what? If the Dodgers win 108, God bless them. They deserve to be the National League champions. They totally do. The National League West champions. But 107 wins is absolutely out there for this Giants team. It's preposterous. It's one of the most unexpected, ridiculous returns I think this city, all of Northern California, has ever gotten from any team in any sport, almost at any level. I mean, I'm sure there's a high school team that nobody believed in that turned into the Bad News Bears or the football equivalent of Remember the Titans at one point. I know, but like this is one of the least expected. It makes the We Believe Warriors look like they were ticketed for the NBA Finals, basically.
They're 26 games better than any genuinely optimistic prognostication for them was. They were a 500 team. If they finish 107-55, and I think that might be a bit generous, but let's just say for purposes of argument, that's where they finish. It means that they, you know, that they were 1/6 of the season better than anybody thought they were. Which is a staggering number. And I think I will move ahead, because I think the next question to be asked at this point is, under the assumption that the Dodgers can't catch them and they end up being the first wildcard team, would you, if you were a Giants fan, which I am not, would you rather see the Dodgers win the wildcard game or somebody else? And I don't think it's an easy question for most Giants fans.
So, oh, I do.
Yeah, I mean, look, rivalry and facing the Dodgers in the postseason would have an element of special wrapped around it. But you know what's even more special?
Winning
the DS, going to the CS, and then taking your shot at the World Series. And I think that you would have a better path, even though they've won the regular season series against the Dodgers. I would much rather take my shot against any other pitching staff, which pitching staffs take over in the postseason. I'll take any other pitching staff than Los Angeles's on my menu.
Yeah, see, that's the logical answer, and that would, in my mind, be the correct answer. I'm not sure that a lot of Giants fans feel that way.
I think they do.
I think they have a warm and fuzzy feeling about getting to the divisional series and then the championship series by eliminating the Dodgers, because it's the one thing they really haven't been able to do since they came out west. I think there's a level of romanticism about this fan base that doesn't exist in a lot of other places. Maybe Boston and New York, where I think they would rather beat each other, even though that's the better team, than, you know, play, you know, Toronto and then breeze through. I'm not sure that everybody feels the same way you do, but if I was a Giants fan, I'd sure as hell want to play St. Louis.
Yeah, I think that's where I would bet. We should take a poll. 888-957-9570. I would bet most Giants fans would take the easier matchup. I don't know that the like institutional memory of the Giants fan is as romantic as you're suggesting, Ray. Which is it's funny that you're the one suggesting romanticism. But
I'm not. Well, that's because I have a low regard for fans in general. And I think they are romantics.
I'm glad you brought it back to your low regard.
Welcome to the circle of love, everybody.
We just want to win. I mean, as a fan of a team in a few sports, I just want to win, and I want to do the things that get us closest to winning. And frankly, you know, as long as the rival's losing, sure, it'd be nice to beat them, and if they make it there, you'll be happy to beat them. But as long as they're gone, I'd rather face the weaker opponent.
I mean, let me just give you one of the Dodgers notes I have for you in today's show. Their staff of Urias, Bueller, Scherzer, Kershaw, and Gonsolin, in their last turn through the rotation, has gone 31 and a third innings with 16 hits, 3 runs, 6 walks, and 32 strikeouts. That is a rotation through ERA of 0.86. Now, the incredible thing is while that's been happening, the best they've been able to do is put a half game on the San Francisco Giants. But that's a pitching staff. The choice between would you like them or column B, I really don't even need to see what's in column B to say, I think we're going to go with column B. I mean, yeah, sure, if it's got to be the... How about this? If you want the romance, you got Romancing the Stone waiting for you if it really is Giants and Dodgers. If you want to win a World Series, there's nothing wrong with taking an easier path, and any path around the Dodgers, by definition, is the easier path. It's not like anyone's afraid of a challenge, but do you want to eat? Let's go to dinner the easy way, for goodness sakes. We have to take a quick break here a little ahead of schedule, because speaking a little ahead of schedule, that's when Alex Mack is going to join us. He's going to do it next, not at 2:30 as we originally anticipated. That means the buffet at the Greenbrier might be opening early, which for any NFL center has got to be good news. So we're going to talk to Alex Mack in just a little bit here on 95.7 The Game. Stay tuned. And stay tuned to the Morning Roast weekdays between 7 and 8 a.m. Be the third caller for a chance to win a 4-pack of 2-day, 1-park-per-day tickets to the Disneyland Resort. Halloween time coming on back to the Disneyland Resort. 95.7 The Game wants to give you a chance to get in on the magic at Disneyland California Adventure Park and both Disneyland. The Happy Hauntings are returning between now and the 31st. Offers are subject to capacity, restrictions, and change without notice. Get all the details at 957thegame.com. And I'm just going to tell you right now, I can't wait until my kids are old enough to bring them down to Disney. That's just going to be magical. It is awesome. Good luck to everyone. And be listening to our morning show, the whole morning show, but especially between the hours of 7 and 8 a.m. Caller number 3, you're going to get a chance to be registered for a wonderful Disney experience. So good luck to everyone, and we're going to have Alex Mack join us on the other side of the break here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Demon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Download the Odyssey app, favorite 95.7 The Game, for all of our top interviews, best moments, powered by DuckDuckGo, privacy simplified. We're so happy to say hello to Alex Mack, who is presented by Harris Ranch Beef, legendary quality. Alex Mack, a six-time Pro Bowler, a member of the 2010 All-Decade Team, signed this year to bring an awful lot of stability to the center of the San Francisco 49ers offensive line. And we're very happy to have our first conversation with someone whose reputation is just absolutely stellar. Alex, my name's Damon. You're going to hear from Ray. Matt's going to say hello in just a little bit. Thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. I'm doing really well.
Everyone at the Greenbrier, nice turndown service, mints on the pillow, ready to go?
It's a very classy establishment. A little bit of the Shining vibes with the decor, but it actually is a really classy place.
Very nice. It's wonderful to have you on, man. It's really good to see you back, you know, in the Bay. Obviously, your college career, it was at Cal, and to be a 49er, was this something you ever thought about when you were in college? Did you get to, oh, I'm guessing, what, Candlestick back in the day when you were at Cal?
I got to play there, at Cal I didn't get to play at Candlestick, but I got to play at Candlestick a couple times over my career, and it's a cool place. I mean, it's gone now, but the fans are cool. I know the 49ers have a real strong fan base, so it's been exciting to join the team and really see them in action in the preseason.
Let's start with the congratulations on the season opening win in Detroit. I'm guessing you and Jimmy pregame planned the fumble on the first snap of the year just to keep the Lions off guard. I'm guessing that was part of the game plan.
Not how you'd want to start the season. That's not a good tone setter for the offense, but I think we made up for it later in the game.
Certainly.
Definitely don't want to turn over the ball ever. So for it to be the first thing we do is not stellar. So we're working to make sure that never happens again.
What was your biggest takeaway from the debut in Detroit? What do you think the team, you know, what message did the team send back to you about what this season might be?
You know, the takeaways we had were, you know, if we're rolling, if we're on our details, we can do some pretty amazing stuff. Like we scored a lot of points. When we were on our details, things were going really well. And you just have to stay on your details. This league's too good to ever relax. I think we made it far too interesting in that game towards the end, and we just need to keep the gas pedal on. Never relax. Make sure you're on your details, and anybody in this league can come back. So it's just one of those things. It was a good wake-up call without having a really good burn for it.
You've been doing this for a long enough time that I'm going to guess when that snap happened, and I don't want to dwell on that because it's not really important, but when a snap gets fumbled, does the center know right away who's to blame? And I'm not asking you to identify blame in this one. I'm just saying, as a general rule, can you tell, even though you're not seeing it, what happened?
Generally, it's hard to tell. You know, you're focused on so much stuff, and it's one of those kind of natural things. If I screw up a snap, like flat out screw it up, yeah, I know I do that. But when it's just something kind of went iffy, it's kind of hard to pinpoint what went wrong. It's just one of those things where I think a lot of adrenaline going quick, trying to explode off the ball, and Jimmy trying to, you know, get the ball to the running back. I think we were just a little bit off, and that's all it takes. It's one of those little details that you really have to be tuned into everything, and you know, don't do it again. You never expect it to happen. You know, so I felt something hit my feet on that play. I was like, "I wonder what that is," and it was the ball, which is not good. Not where the ball should be.
You've obviously played with a handful of different quarterbacks over the course of your career, and I guess, not to keep referring to that play, but one thing that I immediately thought about was how different is what you need to do as a center with the snap when it comes to different like quarterback to quarterback? Do guys want the ball somehow differently, or is it pretty much you're doing the same action no matter who is behind you?
I'd say I'm doing the same action no matter who's behind. It's a matter of figuring out and making them aware of where I place the ball and kind of figure that out. That usually takes, you know, four snaps for anybody. So it's not that big of a deal. Like most snaps, most centers are pretty similar.
49er center Alex Mack here on 95.7 The Game. So you played for Kyle Shanahan, the offensive coordinator, and now you're playing for Kyle Shanahan, the head coach. Much of a difference? Noticeable difference? No difference at all? What is it?
No difference at all, I'd say. I think Kyle is the same guy he's always been. He's now just, instead of it being an offensive meeting, it's a team meeting. He's the same guy. He speaks it pretty real. He's very, you know, down to earth. I really enjoy him. I'm stoked to be here. I'm excited to be in this offense. I think he's a great head coach, and I'm fired up.
So how much does an offensive coordinator, as opposed to a head coach, deal with what's going on in the blocking scheme, which seems so part and parcel to the offense, the running offense especially, that Kyle Shanahan runs? Is he hands-on with the offensive linemen as much as he's hands-on with, you know, QBs, running backs, tight ends, and wide receivers?
I think something that makes him a great, you know, head coach and, you know, when he was offensive coordinator, it was just how solid of understanding he had of the schemes. So he really understood everyone's responsibility and was capable of coaching every position. And so when you have that, you can really hold all the players accountable, the coaches accountable. Everything should mesh very well together. And I think that's the same thing that's going on now.
As the center, you're required to pretty much know what the full blocking scheme is for everybody. So at this early stage, on a scale of 1 to 100, how much do you know about everything you feel you should know about everybody else on your line?
1 to 100. Wow.
That way we could do percentages. It's range. Easier that way.
We could really get in there. I think you can always learn more, so I'll never say 100, although you'd want everybody to know everything backwards and forwards. But I think the offense is evolving, and you do add plays for schemes to try to take advantage of the defense. So I'll give myself a 90, you know, and sometimes there's an amount of trust, you know, what your job is, and you know other people have responsibility from what's your job, but you're not trying to micromanage everybody.
See, we had you coming in at 86.4%, so I'm glad you're rounding up to 90.
Close.
Very close.
Rounded up.
We'll allow it in this first interview. I'm not to bring up things that haven't even happened yet, but part of coming to the Niners is playing the Rams twice a year, and we just watched Aaron Donald on a Sunday night. As the center, obviously that's a guy you're going to be staring at an awful lot. And I'm just wondering, is that something you've thought about, and have you played him in the past, and sort of what is that like?
It's not fun. He's a very good player, and he's one of the best in the business ever to do it. Without a doubt. It was when choosing to, you know, come to the 49ers, having to play, you know, that player and those teams, it's not attractive. You know, you want cupcakes everywhere. But that's not the case. I know the our division is very competitive and it's going to be very tough. But I think if we can weather that storm and get through our division, we'll be a very good team that can do whatever we want in the postseason.
Alex Mack here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky, and obviously Javon Kinlaw is a missing piece so far in game one. He wasn't there. Hopefully he can return soon. As a guy who has spent the entire preseason and training camp basically practicing against him, can you tell us a little bit about what your impressions of Kinlaw are coming into his second year, and if you think he's got the potential to be mentioned, along with some of the best D tackles in football?
I mean, he's got a lot of potential. He's a big, explosive player, and he's definitely has a raw talent right now. I mean, he is in there just smashing into things, and in a good way. He's explosive and can definitely be disruptive. I think this is the proper defense where he can really thrive. I think it'll come down to if he can stay healthy and get out there, and hopefully he can really get a lot of game experience and become a great player.
And, I know that you're not directly taking on Nick Bosa very often, but we keep on hearing that he has just got, stripes on him that most cats do not have. Do you see that out of the corner of your eye? Are you already looking at Bosa as someone who is just a game-changing defensive player?
It looks to be that way. I mean, I'm happy that he plays on the edge. I don't have to touch him too often. He's a physical specimen, and he definitely plays hard. So he's talented. He's gonna be somebody other opposing offenses have to take note of.
Different players can present different challenges, but when was the last time you were truly surprised by a defensive line scheme? Well, where you went, wait a minute, what are they trying to do here? Because I've never seen this before.
It's been a while. I've seen a lot of football now.
Yeah.
Early in the year is usually when that happens because people change and adjust and you haven't planned for stuff that they haven't shown on tape much, and then they show up and you've got a problem solve on the fly, which is not fun. But later in the year, it's copycat league. Everyone's watching everybody's film, and you generally see things kind of occurring, and you talk about it. And in the week of prep, you hopefully cover stuff. I think preseasons are another great time. You see people doing some unsound defensive stuff, which gets you in trouble because if they're blitzing off of one side, they kind of have to cover the other area, and you can depend on that when the guys are doing the right thing. But if the guy's doing the wrong thing, you get surprised.
In following a lot of sort of online media discourse about football defense recently, I've read a lot about defenses that do more actively to try to dictate offenses in the last couple seasons in particular. Brandon Staley's a guy that gets brought up a lot. But the question I'm asking essentially is, you've been in the league for a decade.
Yeah.
How much has the style of defense changed over the course of that time?
I remember, when I was a younger player, the league just didn't install where they have, the two linebackers kind of mug the A-gaps, and there were blitzes and stuff, and that was kind of a new defensive thing. And now every team does it. Every team kind of has that package, and they mug it, and people kind of figure it out. What works, what doesn't work, and kind of how to defend it. And it still works, so you still see it. But it's one of those things that has become less common as time goes on. That was a major package, and you'd have to really prep for. Now it's just, this team does it too, yeah.
How odd is it to not even know when another quarterback is going to come into a game and be under center? Obviously, the Jimmy Garoppolo, Trey Lance experience is, I'm guessing, a little unlike any other that you've played with professionally.
It's evolving. I mean, we've had wildcat packages, but I think this is going to become something more than that. So I think it's great that we can really keep defenses on their toes and not know. I know when there's a different voice that shows up calling the play, that that's a good tip off that something's changed.
To cry and shame that Raheem Mostert doesn't even last three carries into the year. He's a good guy. He's a hell of a running back. But now it looks like that workload is going to fall on young Mr. Elijah Mitchell until we see Trey Sermon get up to speed and whatever this team might find on the waiver wire as it looks around for running back solutions. How different do you have to block for players who aren't the speed of light like Mostert is? And I'll tell you this, it looks like Elijah Mitchell is about as fast as Raheem might be.
Yeah, Mitch did an incredible job stepping up and delivering and, you know, coming to the big stage and really, you know, taking on the challenge and thriving. So, great job as a rookie. I know we have a lot of running back talent back there, and they all get rotated through, and our coaching staff really keeps them accountable and, you know, coaches them very well. So, pretty dependable on anybody who's back there can thrive in the system in terms of, like, what we do in blocking. But and then just to say, like, Raheem is such an awesome dude. It's been great to join this team and get to know him. And, you know, heart goes out to him. Hope he gets healthy and gets back here quick.
You talked earlier about there being almost no difference between the Kyle Shanahan in Atlanta and the Kyle Shanahan here. Are there any schematic differences? Are there things that he likes to do now, as basically just tactically, that are different than what he did in Atlanta? Or is he exactly the same guy?
I think the offense has evolved. I think him as a person is exactly the same guy. Like, he's the same coach. I think the offense is constantly evolving, and it's constantly adding new wrinkles. And I think that's good. That's what you want to see. You want to see what can you learn, what can you get better, what can evolve. And I think this offense is doing it.
Alex, is there a Kyle Shanahan doghouse, and have you ever been in it?
I mean, fumbling the first snap of the regular season is a good way to approach that doghouse, I think. I don't think I've been in it, but, you know, I definitely think that he holds people accountable. And I think that's something that where he's a kind of coach for me that you just always want to put your best on the field for him.
I'm guessing you actually probably played against D'Amico Ryans at some point in your career. What have you seen from him as a first-time defensive coordinator, and did you see that for him when you saw him as a player?
I can't remember if and when I played him, but I'm sure it happened. I played a lot of games. I have the talent of kind of playing the game and, you know, trying to forget about it immediately because it's on to the next. But as a coach, he's done a really good job of getting guys motivated, holding them accountable. You can see the defense working hard all the time, and they made, you know, OTAs and training camp very difficult on us. So hopefully they continue to do that.
For a guy who has been around the league 100 times, who's got the best visiting locker room?
Best visiting locker room. Trying to remember that. Hard to remember. I'm kind of focused on the game. I don't really remember. Somebody who has a hot tub. Some people have nothing in there. It's nice to be able to warm up in a hot tub. I think the old Raider Stadium and the old Charger Stadium took the cake for the worst.
That feels about right. That feels about on brand. There's no doubt about it. I'm guessing the amenities, like you've already said, at the Greenbrier, very, very nice. What is it like to be in the middle of a season and have almost a mini second training camp? Is that what this sort of feels like?
It's a little interesting. I think it's cool in terms of the season just started. It's all business, and we can all be here with no distractions, really. And it's a cool opportunity to have some team bonding earlier in the year, kind of all go through this and be together. And I like it. I mean, I also like my home and my bed, but it for the team, it's totally worth it.
As a Pac-12 guy, how bad do you want the next coach at USC to be?
How bad? Terrible. They could just disband the program. That's fine with me.
But that seems more strident than I thought you'd be, but you'd be willing to go Pac-11 then.
Pac 11. I mean, I went to the Pac 10, so we'd be getting closer to what I'm comfortable with.
Who do you hate more, USC or Stanford?
As a Cal guy, you have to say Stanford.
But as Alex Mack, what do you think?
I mean, I never got to beat USC at my time at Cal, and that's something that goads me a bit to this day. Stanford, I did pretty good against, so I can say there's a pretty big hate for USC.
So if I'm Justin Wilcox, I am calling you and asking one of the greatest offensive linemen in my college's history to come on back and talk to the kids. You going to spend any time in Berkeley doing a little coaching?
I need to come up there and talk to the guys and visit the team. Currently, I'm in West Virginia, so it's hard.
Yeah, not right now.
When there's time, I definitely want to be able to go back there and talk to the team and see them. It's been a couple of years, and that's on me. I need to make a better effort at that.
Well, I tell you, we would probably be yelled at if we didn't ask you about Trent Williams, because this guy just is a human shadow that just casts over people. He's just as large as it gets. Do you really only have to worry about four other spots on the line, because there's just nothing to worry about with Trent? He's got the job.
Trent's a very talented guy. For as you know, talented as he is, he still works really hard, and it shows. I mean, he's in meetings really trying to perfect his craft, and that's something that it's good to see, you know, the older vets do. And he's a monster on the field, which is also great to see.
We have seen some of the amenities of the Greenbrier and the different things. I don't know if you're a golfer at all, if you're going to go on a horseback ride. I'd feel sorry for the horse that had an offensive lineman choose him for an afternoon. I see that they got falconry lessons. Will you be falconing at any point in time? And do you feel, as a former Atlanta Falcon, they shouldn't even charge the room?
It'd be fun to do that. I've never learned how to do that, or if that's something you can do, or do you bring your own falcon? I don't know. So
BYOF?
For that option. Yeah, bring your own falcon. Haven't explored that option. I did see they had a sporting clay course for like skeet shooting. And so on our off day, we went over there and did that, which was really fun.
Why do you think offensive linemen are consistently the best interviews in the NFL?
Because no one, finally someone's talking to us, and we just can't wait to throw knowledge at you guys. Rarely talked to and just usually ignored.
I mean, were you so excited, like, before you called in, you're doing like a couple laps in the pool at the Greenbrier, just excited to talk to the media, finally?
Finally, yeah. Well, you also you dangled the Harris Ranch steak, and I jumped at that opportunity.
Well, let me tell you how this works, big fella. Our friends at Harris Ranch Beef are going. Well, I guess it's not a surprise. You knew about
not
it.
Not a surprise.
They're going to give you a dozen USDA Prime New York strips, a total of 10.5 pounds of meat. Has anyone in radio or media history ever given you 10.5 pounds of meat before today?
Never. And I couldn't. If you need to do it again, I can come back and you can give me 10.5 pounds again. I'll eat it.
We'll do it. Alex, thank you so very much. Continued success to you and your teammates. Have a good week of prep getting ready for the Eagles, man. Really appreciate your time today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Great stuff. Alex Mack. He was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Hey, you want to hook an offensive lineman, you set the bait with meat.
Say it with protein, I always say.
Hey, if you really want to be a great falconer, you got to set your bait with meat. You know, I mean, falconry, offensive line play, maybe there is something there. I think you should get a complimentary course.
Oh, but I that might be off the menu per 49er rules, because the last thing you want is your new center getting like clawed in the face by a vicious raptor. You know, the skeet shooting, they're going to be okay. You know, they all practice gun safety, but you know what? Let's start the whole show over.
Yeah, do it again.
No. You're not taking these 40 minutes away from me.
You still get paid for the 40, Ray.
I'm not staying till 6:40. That's the point.
Ray,
no one's
we'll let you out at
6:40.
We'll let you out at 6:39 tonight, not a minute earlier. That just reset the entire show, which means we're going to have Alex Mack back on in just a few minutes.
We're going to play the Alex Mack interview in reverse. Stay tuned.
Paul is dead. Paul is dead. That's an old joke, kids. You got to look it up or be an old man to even realize what we're talking about.
Do you think he'd come back for 12 more steaks?
Yes. Yeah, I do think he would do that. We're very happy to have talked to him. There really is something about that offensive lineman interview that works each and every time. I'm going to give a little tip of the cap to Cal, too. They crank out a smart cookie every now and then. So thanks very much to Alex Mack for joining us here. We got plenty more coming up. How about a Mort report? I mean, I haven't done one of those in years. Chris Mortensen's going to be joining us coming up. Darren Smith talking about what is wrong with the Padres and will it continue to go wrong, which the Giants hope for, because they're kind of laying down and dying. So thanks very much to Alex Mack for joining us here. Damon Ratto and Kolsky were brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Oh, it's great to have you here today. Seriously, awesome conversation. Alex Mack, he was A+. We'll have that for you a little bit later on in the show. Again, if you missed it, and if you miss anything live, again, you've downloaded the Odyssey app. This is why you need to download the Odyssey app. Do it. Just do it. We got a lot more football coming up today. An awful lot more football coming up today. The doghouse question for Kyle Shanahan, he did a nice job stepping around it. I mean, but I think we got a little bit of a doghouse element with Kyle that is indisputable. I mean, I really think it does exist, Ray and Matt. We've seen it. We maybe it's the player's fault that he doesn't get himself out of it, but it feels like Kyle, you know, he's got such a personal connection to the game, and I think he's got an awful lot of his id into how an offense is run. And if you're not doing your job as a wide receiver, the position that he played, he doesn't just get angry professionally. I think he takes it personally. I really do. I think that there is a personal, I get mad at wide receivers who aren't giving me everything that I expect of them, and then they should even know the things that I don't expect of them, and they should give me that too. Like, I think that there is that personal, my fingerprints are all over this, how dare you not treat it as precious as I do. With Shanahan, I mean, we've seen it with Dante Pettis, and I'm not saying that that's where this Brandon Ayuk thing is going. It would take a few weeks of it not going right for us to say that, and it could all go away in Philadelphia. Again, 4 targets, 3 catches, and a touchdown. No one talks about this anymore. But even 4 targets doesn't feel like an awful lot. And he said today, you know, there are players with less pedigree around him outperforming him. And if that's all it is, okay, that's football. But if that's not all it is, maybe it is a little personal. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think we have enough information to make any kind of sweeping guess. But it still feels to me like this isn't personal as much as it is, I expect you to sort of embrace the job that we're trying to give you as much as possible, and I don't sense that you're doing that yet. I have a hard time thinking that Trent Sherfield's camp was so much better that Brandon Ayuk suddenly sort of lost his place in the wide receiving pecking order. I think there's something that Brandon Ayuk is not providing them. And I don't, you know, again, having been to 0 practices and never wanted to go to a practice ever again, I'm hardly the person to bloviate on this, but this just feels to me not like Sherfield is better, but that he looks like that Shanahan is saying, I'm not getting everything from Ayuk that I want. And to my way of thinking, it just it It just feels like, you know, meeting inattentiveness is part of this, because that stuff is stuff that's easily controllable. And it took, look, it took a lot longer for Shanahan to lose his patience with Dante Pettis than it seems to have with Aiyuk, which leads me to believe that whatever the shortcoming is, it's easily controllable by the wide receiver, and he hasn't done it yet.
See, I'm not sure. It's just, to me, it's that what he says doesn't make sense. I don't understand. I can believe Trent Sherfield had a better camp because we saw it on the field in preseason. But I guess maybe I find it hard to understand why a better preseason performance would elevate a scrap heap free agent, good as he may have been, over a guy who you not only drafted in the first round, but who on the field looked like a first round receiver last year. So as good as Trent Sherfield may have been, Brandon Aiyuk in his rookie season looked better. So like, if it's really just about preseason performance, I understand he's not Jerry Rice, you know, Brandon Aiyuk, but he did establish something as a rookie in terms of his ability to perform. And I would think that that evaluation would matter more than some preseason performances. So I guess it's not that I don't believe that Aiyuk could have had a lesser preseason than Sherfield. It's that I don't really believe that's how you're making this decision. You know,
by the way,
he didn't rotate at all in the first quarter, which it's hard for me to see that as anything but discipline of some kind. So it's not that I think Ray's wrong about some sort of discipline here. It's that I don't quite understand why you're lying about it.
It feels odd that there is a clear expression of public, I'm not happy with the player. Beyond, I mean, if Shanahan just wanted to dismiss this and make it all go away with a press conference, he could do that. He has chosen not to do that. And I think this is a man who understands how his measured words get cut up by the media. And he's given the media more to speculate on than it feels necessary at this moment. You know, Kyle, what do you think of Brandon Aiyuk? Well, it was just a really weird week one, and, you know, a hamstring plus, you know, Sherfield's been really, really impressive, but, you know, I know for a fact that Jimmy believes in him, and Trey has gotten to know him, and he's going to be a huge part of our success this year, and watch him get involved quickly. You know, there would be a real easy way to disarm this bomb instead of leaving it ticking. And it feels like Shanahan is intentionally leaving this topic going tick, 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 instead of cutting the blue cord and just stopping that countdown. And
which
that's what's odd about it.
Yeah, and it makes you think he almost must be trying to send a message to Aiyuk via these public comments. And I just... I'm not sure. I guess Brandon Aiyuk probably knows what that message is, but I you know, it's hard for me to decipher it.
I mean, he said he didn't talk to him after the game. He hadn't talked to him on the way to West Virginia. I mean, have they talked now? Here we are on a Wednesday afternoon. Have they broken any bread yet? Has he called him up and said, come up to my hotel room? I got the corner suite. You wouldn't believe the square footage we got in here. Look at their shower. Oh, by the way, let's talk a little bit about what didn't happen in Detroit and how we get it to happen in Philadelphia. Like, it feels like an accord could have been struck by now, and we still have a frosty situation brewing.
I think that, well, Shanahan said he was going to talk to him before Wednesday. That was in the quote sheet for Monday. So I think they have had that meeting, and Shanahan basically is saying, let me see it. Show me what you're show me what we talked about. And that's why I do believe this is disciplinary more than anything else. It's that I want you to be better than you've been, because we saw it last year. And like Matt, I don't believe that Trent Sherfield was so dramatically better that all of a sudden he is regarded more highly as a talent than Aiyuk is. I mean, I just that makes no sense to me either. That's why I think the message he's sending to Aiyuk is, if you want me to stop, you know, grinding on you, then show me the things that I've been grinding about so that I don't have to do it anymore.
Yeah, I guess. I think that must be it. I just wish I knew what those things were that he's grinding on him about. And I, maybe this is weird on my part, but part of me just wonders why you don't tell us what the thing is unless it's something really off-putting or something.
I think it's because he's basically trying to, you know, tell Aiyuk, I'm not going to embarrass you on this yet.
But I can't
think
love
that's why
musket.
He's not saying anything to the public about it. But I'm quite sure that Aiyuk knows exactly what it is
and what he's
got to do to remedy it.
I just wonder if, well, you know, Trent Sherfield's just better isn't as embarrassing as whatever, you know, I don't know. I'm probably overthinking it, but it just seems to me like saying, well, he just hasn't been good enough is as insulting as anything would be.
Rob in San Bruno. Thanks for the call, Rob. You're on 95.7 The Game.
What's going on, fellas? I mean, I think it's just Cal's ego because he probably questioned him. He's just like his daddy. You know, he felt like he could only be the smartest one in the room. But I feel like when I went to five camps this year, the training camps, Aiyuk was clearly the best receiver on the field, followed by Deebo. And Sanu had a few moments, and Sherfield had a few moments. But it wasn't like Sherfield was out there out playing Aiyuk. Aiyuk was the best offensive player on that field when times I went. So I don't understand. This is, to me, it's unneeded drama. It's not needed. You're trying to win games. You're trying to be a disciplinarian. I mean, what is it? You trying to be Bill Belichick, the disciplinarian? Or are you trying to be Bill Belichick, the winner? Let's focus on winning right now. All this unneeded drama. It's not like ETO and disrupting stuff. I don't understand. I don't get it, man. It's too early in the season for this.
In many ways, I agree with you. Thank you for the call, Rob. Thanks for listening.
Let me play devil's advocate, because I don't think Rob's wrong, but let me play devil's advocate to that last point. Now's the perfect time, because you're playing the Detroit Lions, and it's not like they dramatically missed a wide receiver in that game. They scored 41 points, and Deebo Samuel took the game over.
By the way, I know that everyone in the studio has got a little work now. Do we do a top of the hour rejoin? Is that capable of happening? Or am I going to have to do it live, which is going to
be just a disaster? We have Ray. Well, we could just reproduce our recorded one live. Ray, you could do the read, right?
Yeah, I can make anything up.
From memory?
What station would you like us to work for? This is the BBC.
Welcome to La Raza Radio.
Yes.
Yeah.
Donde está?
By the way, here it is. Thank God, because this would have been terrible.
It'd been great.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.